Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Wednesday, January 18, 2017. I am Jason Powell, and coming up after the break, we will discuss WWE SmackDown featuring the return of Mickie James. Let's hope that WWE does a better job of keeping their Royal Rumble secrets than they did with the secret that Mickie James was going to be returning to television. Word was out all over the place. We had the news. Several sites actually had it before we did as well, but it was not hard to find out that Mickie James was backstage at the SmackDown taping. She was revealed as La Luchadora, and pretty flat, I gotta say. I don't know if it was because so many people knew, she got blocked Becky Lynch from leaving the cage at one point, and then unmasked, ended up being unmasked afterward. And so the idea is that she's been behind this all along. She is a heel, and I don't know if she's going to be in full time necessarily, but she is in for now, and I don't know how many dates that is and all of that, but she is back with the company, and I think that's a good thing. I was actually kind of all for the idea of her being the mystery attacker of Nikki Bella at one point. They go with this mystery angle instead, and I do think she'll work fine with Becky Lynch. I think Becky is over enough that if there's any concern of Mickie being cheered by fans, which was not an issue here, they just kind of sat there as this all played out. I think Becky is strong enough on the mic as a babyface and well-liked enough that that's going to be fine. And I think Mickie is an excellent heel. If you watched her work in TNA, she did a fine job there. So I think that part of it is going to work out. But SmackDown overall, not the finest effort, just kind of flat in parts, but let's get into it. We'll work our way through this. I'll be using Jake Barnett's review, as he had this up on the site as the show was happening, as he does almost every Tuesday night. I filled in for him last week, that's why I say almost every. He was under the weather, but he's back this week, so you can check out his live review. I'll be using that as an outline. They were in Memphis, Tennessee at the FedEx Forum. They had a cage hanging over the ring, and we had no authority figures on Raw. So SmackDown says, we'll show them. They open with Shane McMahon. And they did so for good reason. They, he played up the Royal Rumble a little bit. And then it was time for his big announcement. They positioned this as a huge announcement on the WWE website. I didn't even put two and two together. I kind of felt silly in retrospect, wondering what it might be. It was the Elimination Chamber, which we've known is going to happen. We just didn't know exactly when and where. Once Raw announced their pay-per-view, it was like, it's probably the Chamber. But yeah, I just didn't even put two and two together when the buzz of Shane's huge announcement came up. And he said that the WWE Championship will be defended in the Elimination Chamber, which I find interesting. I'll throw this out as an extreme long shot. They say the title will be defended right now, but could it be they're going to wait until after the Rumble to announce that, the person who wins is actually going to challenge for the WWE Championship instead? I think it's a real long shot. I wouldn't want them to tell us right now that that's the approach they're going to take, because then it kind of tells you that, someone who's going to challenge for the Raw Championship is going to win. So I think, I doubt they're playing it that way, but I just thought I'd throw that out there as a long shot possibility. AJ Styles was not happy about any of this because he has to beat up John Cena and then defend his championship in Elimination Chamber a short time later. So then we ended up with a little back and forth with him and Shane. John Cena came out, and Styles didn't want to let him talk. He just complained about it being unfair, and also talked about how, once again, Cena was gifted, basically, a championship match by his brother-in-law, his would-be brother-in-law. And then he started questioning who would be next to try to steal his spotlight. Well, this led to The Miz coming out with Maurice, and he was boasting about how he was going to win the Intercontinental Championship and the Royal Rumble, leave WrestleMania as the greatest dual champion of all time. And then he and Styles started talking smack back and forth. Miz at one point said that he was beating John Cena before it was cool, while Styles was still growing out his hair to look like a soccer mom. And John Cena was playing instigator and all this, kind of going behind the back of each guy and just kind of egging them on with comments. And, you're going to let him get away with saying that sort of thing. It was cute. And then afterward, after Styles and Miz started to get heated, Shane made a match between the two of them and announced that it would begin right then and there. Well, after a commercial break. Before we got to the match, though, Shane was backstage, and Dean Ambrose encountered him, and I'm like, wow, they're really laying it on thick. We get no authority figures last night, and it's all Shane all the time right now. Didn't think it would last, and it really didn't. But Dean Ambrose approached him and said he wanted in the chamber, and Shane said they could talk about that part. And then he asked about getting a new championship belt, talking about how all the stuff that, you know, Miz made it smell like cocoa butter and tanning spray and all this different stuff. And Shane said that he understands, but there's only one belt. I'm like, good. I was really starting like, oh God, are they going to come up with like some blue Intercontinental title belt? Ambrose then asked for a match with Randy Orton. He said it was because of the beating he took at the hands of the Wyatt family, and that match was made for later in the show. And when he asked for it, I just kind of like, oh, all right, whatever. Then the opening match of the show was The Miz defeating AJ Styles by DQ in 13-11. John Cena sat in on commentary for that match. And the crowd, you know, I mean, I thought they'd really rally behind Styles here. And I don't think, I mean, is it possible this was some sort of a test for AJ as a babyface? I guess, but I don't think it's necessary. I think, you know, the reaction he gets in many cities is proof that if they decide to kind of switch things up and go with him as a babyface at some point, the fans will be there with him. I have no doubt about that, and nor should they. So I don't know that it was that, but it was. I kind of appreciated, even though the crowd wasn't, you know, really, they were engaged, but I don't think they really had a strong desire to see either man win or lose. And this was a non-title match too, but I just kind of liked that it, you know, it just felt out of the norm. You know, SmackDown has that limited roster to work with, and so once in a while I kind of like a match like this, just a little bit outside the box with two heels going at it. And then the finish brought Cena right back into focus because they went to ringside, and Styles ended up tossing Miz into Cena, and then Cena was ready for it, pushed him aside, and then Styles punched Cena. This led to somehow a DQ. So Styles ended up winning. It must have been Cena punching Styles. I think Jake had it reversed. I just can't remember off the top of my head. But Miz ends up going over by DQ. And then after the match, AJ runs away from Cena. And he initially got away. And then he tried to hit Cena from behind, but he ended up taking an attitude adjustment. And then Styles tried to get the best of Cena as he was still tending to Miz, but he couldn't capitalize, and he also took an attitude adjustment. And then Cena held up the WWE Championship to close the segment. And they went to a commercial break there. So, yeah, I mean, it just, even though you got the temporary moment with Miz and AJ going at it, all of a sudden Cena's right back in there, and they're showcasing Cena and AJ for the Royal Rumble. So even if Miz and Styles wasn't your thing, it certainly isn't the first time we've seen them work together. They worked together quite a bit when AJ was still a babyface. You know, they did a good job of not letting this become, you know, kind of a regular thing, I don't think. You know, they may still have some tension. They can revisit this if they want to for some reason. But, you know, they ended up getting it back focused on AJ and John Cena, as they should, with their match just now under 2 weeks away. And just reading Jake's commentary, it seems like I like the match a little bit more than he did. He just, you know, didn't have much at stake, and I'll agree with that. Nothing, you know, neither did the Ambrose match, which we'll get to as well. But yeah, I think it was more just the idea that, wow, didn't expect this to happen. That kind of appealed to me. Then we had some footage of Nikki Bella being assaulted backstage and getting roughed up by Natalya, and then Nikki was in the ring with the microphone. I gotta say, she has, she's trimmed down quite a bit, and the more she does, I know they're twins, the more she looks like her sister. It's kind of crazy. You could always, it was easy to tell them apart. And now when I see Nikki, I think of Brie. I know, they're twins, but see, come on, tell me you couldn't tell them apart easier before. She ended up demanding that Natalya come out and finish what they started, and Natalya ended up appearing in the crowd, and then cut a promo from there, and then Natalya ended up going into the concourse, and Nikki was not happy and followed her. Natalya went to a merch stand and was pointing out all the different merchandise, including Nikki's and even Bret Hart's, and then complaining that she didn't have her own. And she did point out that Nikki's was positioned next to John Cena. And then she started grabbing a bunch of the merchandise and saying she was going to throw it in the trash where it belonged. Apparently, you don't want to mess with Nikki Bella's merchandise sales because she was pissed. She went at her. It was a good physical brawl. I just, you know, it's just, I can't say that this feud is doing anything for me. Keep in mind, it started because Natalya attacked Nikki and then lied about it and then just conceded the moment Carmella confronted, had the two of them together, which was kind of weird. Natalya's promos haven't been the best. This was fine, but, and then it's just so they're feuding, they act like they're longtime friends, and Natalya stabbed her in the back. But it's just a relationship that has never been established on main WWE television. I don't watch Total Divas on a regular basis, so I couldn't tell you if it's something that's been played up heavily there. But it just kind of feels empty that, oh, this long relationship, and how could Natalya do this when, like, it's never been played up that way ever on WWE TV. Then we had the Wyatt family make their entrance, and they did recap some of the issues between Orton and Harper, and Wyatt kind of being in the middle of that. And then it was time for the second match, and it was a long one. It was Dean Ambrose defeating Randy Orton in 16-11. Pretty slow paced at times, as some Randy Orton matches can be with the dreaded chin lock of doom. They started very slow, knowing that they were going 15 minutes plus. In fact, before they went to the first commercial, it's like, wow, this is dull. And there were some kind of highs and lows here. And it's funny because just looking ahead at what Jake thought of the match, he liked this one more than Styles and Miz. And again, for me, it was more just kind of didn't expect to see that happen with the heels going against one another. And in this case, I was just kind of bored. Again, nothing really at stake, and it just kind of went on forever. And then the finish was a distraction finish. We had Luke Harper pissed off and getting in the ring just as Randy Orton was setting up for his finisher. And so you had Harper going after Ambrose and Orton being distracted by this and kind of getting out of his Viper pose mode and being rolled up by Ambrose and pinned. So yeah, just the finish was fine as far as what they're trying to accomplish with the Wyatt family. I can't say it's all that interesting to me. It's not bad. I mean, it's better than Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt was with their. And where it just felt like Bray had one promo for Randy, and there just really wasn't much going on. It was kind of a dead-end feud. I think ultimately that's where this is all going back to. But then after the match, things did get a little more interesting as far as that is concerned. It's something, well, you had Bray trying to separate Orton and Harper. But they ended up coming to blows, and then Bray got them to calm down. And then he turned and punched Luke Harper in the face. And Harper was very dejected, and he ended up leaving. Orton was smiling, and as Jake pointed out, he didn't let Bray see it, and that was the end of the segment. Now they did end up announcing that we're going to get Harper and Orton, and we also had Bray Wyatt appearing on the Talking Smack show. You can find, I would assume it's up by now as I record this. I'm not quite sure. It usually comes in. At a certain time, but if everything's on time with John Moore today, then the Talking Smack recap should be up by the time that you are listening to this. John does a, I always praise it because he really does a hell of a job of catching all that. And Bray was on there talking about this match, and we also heard from Jerry Lawler on the show and Baron Corbin, who they really didn't do anything to follow up with his loss to John Cena on SmackDown, but they did on Talking Smack, and he handled it really well. I like that. But I'll defer to John for that one. So we get to it's time for Jerry Lawler to host the King's Court, the talk show segment, and his special guest was Dolph Ziggler, and immediately you couldn't help but notice like Jerry Lawler is wearing his ring attire. He's like no shirt. He's got the tights on. He's got a jacket on. It's like. Kind of, I was joking when I wrote it on Twitter. It's like, is he like heading straight out for an independent show main event or something? It just seemed odd because we've seen Jerry Lawler in street clothes so many times that I know it's what he wears sometimes, but just like he's not wrestling, so why is this happening? And I had somebody say that maybe he's working the dark main event on Twitter in response, and I haven't seen any results as far as the dark matches are concerned. But I'd be very surprised if WWE wanted him back in the ring, considering that he had a heart attack. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Jerry Lawler would love to do it again, because he gave us a good, positive update on his health and all of that on Talking Smack as well. But Ziggler would be. The idea was that Lawler would ask him questions about what he's been doing lately, as far as his new heel approach and what he's done to Kalisto and Apollo Crews, and he wouldn't answer him. And Lawler finally got him to talk. Ziggler started. He recalled that the night that Lawler suffered the heart attack, and he showed footage of him dropping elbows on Lawler earlier in that night, which has come up. And then after the footage stopped airing, Ziggler said he knew what that was. He said Lawler always blamed him for what happened, and he said he should have. And then and by the way, Dolph using a very slow, more deliberate kind of pace with his mic work here. And it was much better. If you relate to Twitter, if you weren't watching live, I was joking when he wasn't saying anything that it was the best that Dolph has ever sounded. But it actually worked when he started to speak too, because he just he just had a different approach than he normally takes, and there was no high pitched whiny Dolph Ziggler that he tends to drift into when he gets worked up. So I like the new promo style. I don't know if he can do this all the time, or if that's the plan, I should say. But I liked it, and Lawler ended up kind of arguing back with him a little bit. Ziggler ended up telling him that if he didn't stop with the questions, he would finish back. He would finish what he started 4 years ago. And Lawler said he had one last question. He asked him how it felt to know that no matter how many times he changed his attitude, he would always be a loser. That's a very fair question. Dolph ended up super kicking him to the chest. That's right, a heart kick. You've heard of the heart punch? Well, I think we saw a heart kick from Dolph Ziggler, and then he left. This got good heat from the crowd. And then JBL comes barreling into the ring. And by barreling, I mean he tripped over a wire and fell down, but he ended up getting in the ring. So the idea was that he was there to, comfort, check on Jerry the King Lawler. And Lawler did get back to his feet pretty quickly. Is it in great taste to bring up the heart attack? I mean, I have no, obviously, it's Jerry Lawler, and I would be stunned if he wasn't 100% for it. So there's that part of it. But is it going to be a turnoff for viewers? It's always a different question. I don't think so. Coming off the night, where they decided to dedicate one of their longer memorial video packages to Jimmy Snuka. I don't, maybe some people were kind of at the end of their rope with WWE, but I wasn't bothered by this at all. And especially just knowing how Lawler is with this kind of thing, I'm sure he was all for it. And Ziggler, I think that this helps him. It definitely does. And I did get a kick out of JBL. When he came out there, did give a shout-out to JBL, too. So just that little tiny thing kind of establishing that they're buddies. And then JBL comes running in to check on him, even though it's JBL who essentially took Jerry Lawler's job on SmackDown when they promoted Corey Graves. Now, you listen to Jerry Lawler when he was talking about the whole domestic incident that he had. It was interesting that we talked about this at the time. It really wasn't something that got a lot of play. Everybody was more focused on the domestic thing. When Lawler was talking, I wonder if this was when he was pulled from SmackDown. Or the pre-shows, I should say. I wonder if that's what it was. But at one point there, he praised JBL a little bit, but he talked about Corey Graves just kind of being learning on the job. And I'm like, oh, God, Corey Graves is doing fine. I think Jerry's kind of missing it on that one. But I got to say, I definitely prefer Jerry Lawler on commentary ahead of JBL. I'm not always a huge fan of, just the joke book telling Jerry the King Lawler, but when he started playing a heel again on SmackDown, it was a lot of fun, and I thought he and Mauro Ranallo had good chemistry, and I certainly enjoyed that more than this four-man mess that they have on SmackDown. It's just so unnecessary to have four people out there. From there, we ended up with and by the way, before I forget, Jerry Lawler it was announced on the Talking Smack show that Lawler will join Corey Graves and Michael Cole as the broadcast team for the Royal Rumble match. So I don't think they're calling the entire show, especially because they also said that Lawler is going to be on the kickoff show with Renee Young and Booker T. So it's cool. I like that they're bringing Jerry Lawler in for the special occasion. In that interview he did, this was certainly when he was when they shook things up with the pre-show. Lawler said that Vince McMahon had contacted him and assured him that he wasn't done with WWE, even though that whole move was taking place. And sure enough, they're finding a prominent spot for him at the Rumble, and so it's not just going to be, well, once a year you'll see him at WrestleMania. He could become that, but for now, at least they're finding ways to use Jerry the King Lawler. Then we had the Wyatt family pop up, and Bray Wyatt said that the Wyatt family would enter the Royal Rumble, and he said first, they had a personal matter to attend to. with next week Luke Harper and Randy Orton competing one-on-one, and he said afterward they would be stronger than ever. I find it interesting that the entire Wyatt family is going in. I also did, I liked the way it was framed on Talking Smack with Bray Wyatt saying essentially that, yeah, we're in this and I'm going to win it. You know, making it kind of, I think, tipping, the, you know, just letting people know the strategy is that those guys are working for him. Now, could that be where Randy Orton finally has enough? Will the Wyatt family turn on him next week instead? You know, I mean, I'm even though I can't say that I'm all that intrigued, I'm not enjoying Randy Orton as in the Wyatt family as much as some folks are, and each his own. But I think there's some interest here as far as, all right, is Harper out? Is Orton out? And I'm also waiting for, all right, if Orton leaves, you know, if the Wyatts were to attack Randy next week, it puts Randy in kind of an awkward spot because then he goes back to being a babyface when it's like he was kind of kicked out of the heel group. It's not like he's the guy who said screw you to them or this has all been some sort of a facade or anything like that. But I do wonder, you know, we should be at that point where Eric Rowan's about to return from his, I would think, timeline-wise. I think he can be back fairly soon. And I wonder if, you know, so when Bray talks about the Wyatt family being stronger than ever after next week, do they ditch Orton and they get Eric Rowan back? And so you're kind of back with the original trio, and that trio ends up in the Rumble. And I would assume Randy's going to be there either way, but just throwing that out there as a possibility. And with Randy, I don't think Bray Wyatt or Randy Orton are going to win the Royal Rumble, but could this be a story to watch in the Rumble? Certainly. Yeah, with Randy, you know, which side is he on? You know, is he, you know, it, with Bray, especially if they make that more prominent than just talking smack, saying, making it seem like, you know, the guys are in there to help him. The idea is to help, is that he wins the Rumble. He even said outright, I will win the Royal Rumble. So if, you know, does that get tested? And is that where Randy snaps on him? Or does Randy comply, if he's even still with them by that point? We'll see. It was main event time. You had we had the cage lower, got the cage music and all that good stuff, and then the ring entrances took place. They went to a commercial, and when they came back, it was time for the match, and it was Alexa Bliss defeating Becky Lynch in 14:22 to retain the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. And this, I enjoyed the cage match quite a bit prior to the finish. I thought the women were working hard. It was physical. They were battling on top, on the top rope and all of that. It was just, you know, it's a good hard-hitting match. And then La Luchadora comes out and stands in the doorway just as Becky was potentially had a chance to leave through the doorway. And then Lynch ended up kind of just getting back to business and putting the disarmor on, and then La Luchadora at that point entered the cage and kicked Becky to break that up, and then Alexa and the I think it was Mauro, one of the four broadcast team members, was there to tell us that it's all legal in a cage match. And then Alexa Bliss ended up hitting a snap DDT and covering Becky and getting the win that way. So it's with help from La Luchadora. Now I'll always say I'm not a fan of what cage matches have become, as somebody who, you know, started watching wrestling in 1980, and the cage match was the, you know, at that time, the ultimate blow-off. Yeah, I mean, eventually, what happened with Terry Gordy, you know, the Freebirds back in the day, and World Class with the door being slammed, yeah, that was an exception, and it was a great one. But usually the cage match, you know, the idea was that that was the blow-off match, and now it's just not. You know, it's things like this happen, and I've never been a huge fan of WWE. The idea that you can go through the cage door to escape. You know, I'm not even big on the escape rules. I can live with it, but I'd prefer it not be through the door necessarily. But over the top, even that's pushing it for me. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of this, but I've just kind of, I wanted to mention it, but I've kind of just learned to accept that's how it is. But then, so afterward, you have La Luchadora and Alexa Bliss trying to rough up Becky, but she was able to fight them off briefly. She knocked Alexa down with a kick and a clothesline, and then kicked La Luchadora and grabbed her mask, and it conveniently came off, and revealed Mickie James. And then Becky Lynch stood there in shock. Again, not a big reaction, but Alexa Bliss then hit her from behind, and then Bliss and James stood over Becky Lynch with the SmackDown Women's Championship, and that is how the show ended. So, yeah, not a great, Again, I don't know if it was just a lot of those fans knew it wasn't a surprise to them, or if it was from their view, like, who's this again? Or if it was just really flat, that this is how you're reintroducing Mickie James as someone, I mean, I think it's kind of mixed in terms of should she be a babyface or a heel, I think, in the eyes of fans. But, as someone who didn't mind the idea of her coming back as a heel, especially when it was to feud with Nikki, given the history with the. With John Cena that Mickey has and all of that, or at least the perceived relationship, it's got to be in a better place than people thought it was. If they're going to share the same locker room, I don't think that's an issue any longer. But I still thought she it was a good heel. She could pull that off, and but I didn't think La Luchadora was a hot reintroduction for her. I felt it was a little bit beneath Mickey James to just. Be that character. Just look silly in that outfit, and that's how you reintroduce Mickie James. And believe me, I do understand those who thought, boy, you reintroduce her kind of the way she was at NXT, where she's the returning veteran, and now she's a mom, and there's different ways that she could have worked as a babyface as well. But let's judge this after a couple of weeks. Let's get her out of that damn suit, and let's see what she says. I can't say I was actually hoping Becky was going to win the championship. And then, Mickey would reveal herself somehow so that they were feuding over that championship. A little odd to me that now all of a sudden you have Becky feuding with two people. As much as I've enjoyed Alexa Bliss, we're getting to that point where it's like, all right, how much more can her and Becky do? But I also don't see an obvious next opponent for Alexa Bliss in anything meaningful, with Nikki kind of tied up doing her thing, and then the other women just kind of falling by the wayside right now. It's Alexa Bliss feuding with the two of them. One thing I'll point out, they did have the video package on Raw for the just the Triple X movie promotion was focused on Lita, and I found that interesting because she was she was pulled from the pre-show. Well, the pre-shows were canceled, and so she was kind of out of a WWE assignment at that point. And I remember Jim Ross reporting that she had actually told him that she was no longer with WWE, and then out of the blue. I mean, they could have picked anyone for the Triple X movie sponsorship video that they tie in, and they went with her. So are they setting up some sort of a tag team thing with kind of, Lita being on the legend on one side, Mickey on the other? Just a shot in the dark there. I have no idea, but just throwing out a few things that I think are interesting that may not ever happen. But I guess I've thrown a few of those at you now. But yeah, I mean, it just didn't. This SmackDown just didn't have the pace to it. They didn't have many matches, and it was just not that they were bad matches, but yeah, I mean, three matches in one show. There's times where that works on SmackDown to have fewer matches and all, but it's just, I don't know. If I didn't know better, it was like, what was half the crew traveling to Europe? Is you get that sometimes on the old SmackDown shows, and that's not happening. So it's like, why were there so few people on this show? It was kind of strange, but not a great live crowd either. Memphis just was not, particularly hot for this show, and maybe it's just because WWE didn't give them a lot to cheer about. But also not an insulting show. I want to point that out. SmackDown continues to be, I think, the most entertaining show on a weekly basis, the most consistently entertaining show that WWE does as far as their regular weekly television shows. And I joked last night in members' audio, like, did they turn around? Did they like? As a joke, switch creative team because Raw was better. And go figure, SmackDown was the one that was down from its usual standards. But still, I mean, it was fine. It just, I wasn't wowed by this show as I have been a lot of other SmackDowns. But that is going to do it for today, everybody. Be sure to check the main page for a blog by Hayden Gleed, who attended one day of the UK title tournament, and then he also the next day went to the Progress show that he already had tickets for that event. He and Darren Gutteridge went to that show, and if you may have heard Darren and I on Monday talk in depth about the UK title tournament and just picking Darren's brain about the UK independent scene because Darren is located in the UK. Well, obviously, so is Hayden, and so he checks in with his thoughts on WWE kind of moving into that territory with this UK title NHL tournament and how he thinks it'll affect the Indies and things of that nature. And so a really good piece by Hayden Gleed that, in fact, I think that'll probably be up a little bit later on today. And then .NET Weekly will be available for the members. Jake Barnett and I are going to be getting together to discuss. We'll definitely be talking Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, and we'll also have some behind-the-scenes notes on TNA. But to the best of my knowledge, have not been reported anywhere else. That one will be available exclusively to the members. As always, if you are interested in membership, visit the main page. Get into the sign-up area. Three different pricing options. $7.50 gets you in the door for 1 month. Want to save yourself some money? There's a six-month option. You take the annual option, that brings the average price down to $5.50 per month. Save $2 a month. But either any way you want to do it, great time to sign up. WrestleMania season is here. Well, they'll say it starts at the Royal Rumble. I say it pretty much starts in January. But Royal Rumble season is here. How's that? So a great time to sign up for membership. And as always, if you have any questions on that, hit me up on Twitter, at ProWrestlingNet. That'll probably do it for me this week. Not quite sure of the schedule with the guys yet, but I know Zach Zimmerman will be by tomorrow with the NXT audio review, and I'm guessing, don't know for sure, that we'll get a Pretentious Wrestling podcast coming up later on this week, so you may not have heard the last of me just yet. We'll have to wait and see if Jake and Will come through with that. I'm not just having checked in with those guys, but either way, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for supporting us at .NET, and I will talk to you again real soon. Take care.